Recordings has been started.
Great. Thanks so much, Mae. Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all. Welcome to the Review of All Rights Protection Mechanisms and All GTLDs PDP Working Group Call on the 21st of December, 2016 at 2200 UTC. In the interest of time today, there will be no roll calls. We have quite a few participants online. Attendance will be taken via the Adobe Connect room. If you're only on the audio bridge today, please let yourself be known now.
Hi, it's Beth Allegretti. I'm on audio only.
All right. Thanks, Beth. We'll note that. And also, as a reminder, all participants, please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes, and please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll turn the call back over to Phil Corwin.
Well, hello to everyone. Happy holidays. Thank you for joining in this week leading up to Christmas and Hanukkah and other holidays. I'm not going to try to list them all. I know there's many at this time of year. And happy winter. Today is the summer, the winter solstice. We are going to aim to wrap up our work of reviewing these Trademark Clearinghouse questions today. And as we do so, I'd ask everyone to remember that we don't have to be 102% precise in framing these questions. These are questions where we've gotten questions from the community. We're trying to consolidate and rationalize them. The people answering these questions will be us. They're not going out to third parties, so we don't have to be quite as precise, because if there's any questions about what they mean, we can hash that out as we get into them. So we're hoping that the co-chairs had a call yesterday, and it's our strong hope. We just have five questions left that we can wrap them up today. And actually, starting in our first call in January, start to get into the substance of addressing the questions rather than framing them. So with that as a preview, can we get that document up in the up on display? It was there briefly and disappeared. Okay. I tell you, we really need it displayed where we can scroll, have scroll control, and where all the boxes can be read, where they're not cut off.
Bill, this is Mary.
Yeah.
So I've just noticed that this document, which actually is the latest version, is displaying as a clean version without the red line. So we are going to work on trying to get the red line version put up. But in the interest of time, would you like to work off this clean version?
Yes, Mary. I think that's good. Hold on a second. Just let me orient myself here. Okay. All right. So we are, when we ended the last call, we were dealing with question 3.2, which is on page 4 of the document, and that is the one which currently reads, should the scope of the RPMs associated with the Trademark Clearinghouse be limited to apply only to the TLDs that are related to the categories of goods and services in which the dictionary terms within the trademark are protected. In the co-chair's call yesterday, we agreed, all of us, and I know Kathy Kleiman is on the call today. J. Scott Evans had to send regrets. He's on a plane right now. We agreed that this question, let's just leave it where it is right now and come back to it when we discuss questions related to the Sunrise registrations and claims heard, because really the questions we're dealing with now for Trademark Clearinghouse are basically go to, are the criteria for registration the correct ones, and are they being administered properly? Are they being enforced and not being administered in a way that's either too narrow or too broad? And this really goes more to the effect of the registration for the associated RPM. So the co-chairs agree that this question should be deferred for now and move to Sunrise and Claims. And so that brings us down to the next question, which is, should the trademark plus 50 be retained as is, amended, or removed? And that's really just a question to guide our discussion of the trademark plus 50, which was an implementation detail, and we'll be reviewing how often it's been used when we get to it. So in the chair's opinion, this question is sufficient to guide our discussion for when we get into the substance, but does anyone think we need to add or detract anything from this question to guide our discussion of trademark plus 50 when we get into substance? Well, seeing no hands raised and hearing no one, we're going to accept that question as is. And that's fantastic progress. Thank you. Next question, should the Trademark Clearinghouse matching rules be retained, modified, or expanded to include plurals, marks contained, or marks plus keyword, and or common typos of a mark? Right now, the trademark plus 50 is limited to registrations of terms that are confusingly similar to the trademark but not an exact match, that have been recovered by the rights holder either in a UDRP action or in a trademark litigation. And this is this question goes to whether rights holders should be restricted to allowing to registering just exact matches of their marks other than trademark plus 50, or have some leeway to register variations of their marks. So again, the question for our group is this question sufficiently clear to guide our discussion when we get to that topic? And I see Mary, feel free to put up the red line, although I think the questions we're dealing with now won't have any red line marks because we haven't dealt with them yet. But everyone, please bear with us as we put in the red line version of the document, which reflects the changes we've made so far in discussion. And can we unlock the scroll so we can get back to where we were? Okay. Okay, let me just... Okay, so on that question 3.4 about opening up and making more flexibility in what can be registered, anyone think that the question needs to be improved in any way to guide our discussion? If not, we can move on to the next category. All right, we're going to accept question 3.4 as stated and move on to access and accessibility. First question 4.1, how accessible is the Trademark Clearinghouse database and RPM rights protection actions and defenses to individuals, organizations, trademark owners, and trademark agents in developing countries? Let me start the discussion on this one. I'm not sure that accessible is the right word. I usually think of accessibility in making physical spaces or media useful for those with handicaps, with limitations of some type, visual, audio, whatever. So let me start the discussion. Is accessible the right word there? Do we understand what's meant by this question? Anyone want to chime in here? And George Kiriko says accessible equals affordable. It might mean that, George, I'm not sure there's a cost to access this or whether the database can be accessed. I think it's more on whether it's available in other languages. It's well known. Kathy, I see your hand up.
Sorry, coming off mute. This is Kathy Kleiman. Anybody from the subgroup, please jump in. Actually, I think it's interesting, I think, the way it parses, because I think there is this discussion of accessibility, not just affordability, but can people reach the Trademark Clearinghouse database, as well as the rights protections. We should probably copy this question, not replace it, not move it completely, but keep it here as well as copy it into the trademark claims in the Sunrise period. But I just wanted to let everybody know that the parsing of developing countries was really tied just to that last clause. So individuals, organizations, trademark owners is kind of its own set. You know, can everybody reach into the Trademark Clearinghouse database and understand what's happening? And then it was trademark agents in developing countries. That it was its own clause. Someone had raised that there was an issue
with
trademark
agents.
Okay.
So, Kathy, really there should be a semicolon after trademark owners.
Yes.
Separate out that last
clause.
Good idea. If staff can note that. I think, again, for our own use, if we view accessibility broadly as ability to know it's there and to utilize it, it may be fine for our own internal purposes of guiding our own discussion, but I'm happy to take other comments on this. And Paul Tattersfield suggests we change trademark owners to rights holders. I'm fine with that. That's the term we usually use in regard to those who have registered trademarks. Christine Duran said accessible is defined as capable of being used, influenced, seen, understood, appreciated. So, yeah, I agree. If that's the definition, I think that covers all the bases. And Susan Payne agrees with changing it to rights holders. So I think if we just put in that semicolon after trademark owners and change trademark owners to rights holders, we've got a question that's perfectly fine for our own internal use for guiding our own discussion of this point. Is that acceptable, or anybody else want to suggest some change or addition to it? Petter. I saw Petter's hand up, but it disappeared. I guess he was agreeing. So, let's put that question to rest and move on to 4.2. What concerns are being raised about the Trademark Clearinghouse being closed? What are the reasons for having/keeping the trademark database private? And should the trademark database remain closed or become open? Let me start the discussion. I think the word closed is perhaps the better word. We mean confidential, but it's the full database of what's been registered in there is not available to the public. Although there is some reason to think that some people have reversed engineered in some ways by submitting what purported to be initial registrations to see if it would generate a claims notice, which is one way to find out if a term is in there, but it's not generally available. Are people okay with the word closed, or should we change it to confidential or some other term? And is there anything else people want to suggest on this question? This group is awfully quiet today. I think everybody's anxious to finish the call and get back to their holiday shopping. Petter, we've got some support for confidential rather than closed. So I don't think it's a big deal, but let's change closed to confidential. the understanding's the same, that it's not, you can't just go and find out what marks have been put in the TMCH. So, well, changing closed to confidential, anybody else have any suggestions for altering this question in any way or supplementing it? Okay, well, then we'll shut down that one, and we'll change closed to confidential and otherwise keep it as is, and and we have just two more questions to go at 17 after the hour. Cost and other fundamental trademark clearinghouse features. Question one, should the clearinghouse remain a single provider or should we open it to different providers, of course, with a central database that should be accessed by the different providers? Is it practical to have more than one provider? Let me start off our discussion here. When the co-chairs went through these remaining questions yesterday, our general thinking was that this might be a question better addressed by the subsequent procedures working group than by our own. What we're looking at here is the criteria for that define what marks can be registered in the clearinghouse, whether they're being administered properly, and the efficacy of the RPMs that flow from those registrations. This seems to be a question that's more in the subsequent procedures bailiwick of changing. It wouldn't change the criteria if there was more than one trademark clearinghouse provider. That's really more of a question of whether it's necessary to have a single provider, whether it's practical to have more than one, and whether competition would be beneficial. But I see several hands up, so let's hear from folks why they think this is in our jurisdiction or in the other working group's jurisdiction, as well as whether the question, if we keep it, is worded properly. Christine Durane, please go ahead.
Thanks, Christine from Amazon Registry. My thought goes to sort of the fundamental question that I keep asking of every single charter question and everything else is, what's the problem that we're trying to solve, right? So for me, I'm thinking we're trying to come up with these charter questions, and as you just pointed out, Phil, they're going to the idea that how do we get to the questions? How do we figure out where the problem points are and the pain points are so we can identify solutions and figure out if the TMCH is working as intended and protecting rights the way that it wasn't designed to do? So I think the question really is one of, is there a problem with the efficacy or value or the work of the Trademark Clearinghouse that could be possibly improved upon by investigating the idea of putting some competition into the mix? I agree. I don't think we are going to solve that problem or recommend it, and I think it definitely belongs in another group. However, I think it's fair game for us to decide, are there problems that exist that could be solved with competition? Thanks.
Okay. Yeah, thank you for that, Christine. And again, a lot of these questions came from the community, and we're just combining and refining them. And I see Jeff Newman and Jeff's been a strong proponent of multiple providers, saying competition could bring costs down and therefore make the clearinghouse more effective. I'm not going to put Jeff on the spot and ask whether he thinks it should be in the working group that he's co-chairing, because the co-chairs here plan to talk to both him and Avery on that point, but though we welcome any thoughts. But Susan Payne, please share your thoughts.
Yeah, thanks. I think this question does belong in this group. The TMCH doesn't really have a role outside of the rights protection mechanisms, even if we're talking about but even if we're talking about private rights that were created outside of the ICANN mandated ones, we're still talking about RPMs. There is some other use actually for the TMCH in relation to Spec 13. But the reason the TMCH was set up was to support the rights protection mechanisms. And I think the manner in which it was set up falls within the scope of that. But more specifically, to go to Christine's point about what is the problem, what is it that needs to be fixed, I think the feedback during the staff report procedure in particular was some of the brand owner feedback was that there were some problems around pricing and that people felt that the price of putting marks in the TMCH potentially limited its attractiveness for use and consequently usability. Now, obviously, that's something as a group we're going to have to explore. But if we do explore it and we conclude that that's an issue, then it will be our task to consider how that could be addressed if we consider it needs addressing. And one of the ways it might be addressed is by competition. So I think it very definitely falls within the remit of this group. I think as a question, it probably almost certainly is not an early question that we'll be considering. It's one that comes sort of towards the end of our consideration, probably rather than at the beginning, but I definitely think it's one that sits here rather than in subsequent procedures. Although fundamentally, I mean, as long as there's an agreement about where it sits and everyone is clear in both PDPs who's dealing with it, I think it's something needs dealing with. I just think it sits better here.
Okay. Thank you, Susan. And Kurt.
Yeah, thanks. So I don't disagree with anything that's been said here. I think part of the problem that you might have had with it is that it does seem like implementation advice rather than a charter question. In other words, it's one of the questions you get to down the track. And specifically, if we're focusing on cost, like the title of this category does, and the discussion that happened earlier, you know, there's a lot of elements to cost. There is the price that's charged by the clearinghouse, but it's also the scope of work that might be reduced. It's the whole value chain, including agents that are included in the costs, as Carolyn Chacoin brought up in an earlier discussion. So I think Susan's right that this discussion belongs with this group, but I think the question is misworded because it only focuses on a narrow portion of the cost. And it doesn't consider, you know, the implications of, you know, what might happen to cost of contribution if competition is introduced. It might be decreased or it might be increased. And it doesn't focus on other major elements of the cost. And that's why these other two proposals are there to re-ask the question. So I think Susan's right. It belongs in this group, but not as the conclusory question we have here, but rather a broader inquiry into cost and maybe other problems with the clearinghouse.
Okay. Well, Kurt, do you have any specific recommendations for changing the wording? We want to wrap up these questions today.
My proposal was proposal one with our smaller working group, and then I forgot who submitted proposal two, but here there's two proposals there that we could debate. So I'm for sort of the broader questions here, since we're at the charter level, which is proposal one, but I think proposal two probably captures it also.
Okay. Well, we've got alternative. I do think that question one, you know, the cost factor needs to be brought in. Let's take a quick let me hear from Kathy, and then I want to get some feedback on proposal one or two as possible substitutes for the current question. Kathy, go ahead.
Actually, Phil, go ahead, and I was going to address the proposal one, proposal two, so it'll make sense. My comments will make more sense after you've reviewed them. Thanks.
Okay. And Susan, is that an old hand? But anyway, we've got two proposed substitutes here. Proposal one, does the present structuring of the clearinghouse optimize such operational considerations as cost, reliability, global reach, and service diversity and consistency? or should significant changes be considered? Proposal two is, what are the concerns with the trademark clearinghouse database being provided by a single provider, and how might those concerns be addressed? I think, frankly, proposal one is a better question than the one in the left-hand category. I think it's more focused on the things we want to consider. You might even add in the first part of proposal two to that, what are the concerns with the trademark clearinghouse being provided by a single provider, ? But I prefer proposal one to what's in the first column. But how about the group? I'm looking down at the chat room to see what people are saying. Griffin Barnett has proposed a variation of proposal one, which is taking into consideration cost, reliability, global reach, diversity of services, consistency, and other possible factors. Would it be desirable and practical to have more than one provider for the trademark clearinghouse services? Why or why not? I kind of like that. I'm not sure we need the second why or why not that's implied in any question, but I kind of like that reformulation of proposal one. Kathy, see your hand up. Chime in, please.
Thanks, Phil. The chat room discussion is a good one. People have already spoken to proposal one, so I wanted to speak to proposal two, which was the subgroup designed it to kind of reflect the way we handled other questions, which is there a problem? Does that problem rise to the level of something we even want to try to solve as a working group? Whereas proposal one jumps in, and I haven't really evaluated the new one, but proposal one jumps in and says, you know, start optimizing operational considerations. And as a previous management consultant in my prior life, we could spend the rest of our life looking at optimization issues. I supported what the co-chair said, that we kind of move it to a different working group. But if we're going to keep it, I've always liked proposal two, which creates a threshold. Is there a problem that we should be spending months of our lives together evaluating? Thanks.
Okay, I'm just trying to okay, there's a lot of support for proposal two, although I think there's some elements of proposal one and its variation that are useful for guiding our discussion when we get into this. How about, let me propose this. How about we do proposal two reading like this? Are there concerns about such operational considerations as cost, reliability, global reach, and service diversity and consistency due to the TMCH database being provided by a single provider? And if so, how might they be addressed? That kind of keeps proposal two as the base, but throws in the various criteria of concerns that have been expressed by members of the community. I see Mary has her hand up. Go ahead, Mary.
Yes, thanks. Thanks, Phil and everyone. So I was just going to suggest that if there is no clear proposal that the group prefers, and noting that even though we've got over 30 participants today, that's not the full set of members, what we could do is have a straw poll that we can put things into a survey, noting, of course, that it is not a formal vote, but then just to have an indication, and then the co-chairs can take a look at the results and come up with a proposal or a decision for the working group.
Okay. Well, that would put off the folks think we can wrap this up in the next 5 minutes here, or do we need to go out to a broader group? And let me say, when we finish today, we're going to circulate this, since our next meeting is not till January, we'll circulate the final status of all of these questions so that members of the group who are not on today's call, as well as those who are and want to take one last look over everything, can review it and get back on the list if they think there's any issues with any of the questions. So we're not completely locked in stone with what we decide today. I think we're close to consensus. Again, the formulation I had put out there, which there's been some support in the chat room, is over on the notes. Okay, I guess it's alternative proposal 3 over on the notes side, on the right-hand side of the screen. Taking into consideration cost, reliability, global reach, diversity of service, consistency, other possible factors, would it be desirable and practical to have more than one provider for the TMCH services? Why or why not? I could live with that. Can the group live with that? Again, we're the ones going to be answering this question, so the way it's posed doesn't restrict anybody from chiming in with any relevant point or consideration they want to once we get into the subject matter. Let me ask, now we have a proposal 4 on the side there, which is very similar to proposal 3. I kind of like 4 better because I think, if so, how they may be addressed. It doesn't presume the answer, and I'm not fond of why or why not. It's just, I think this is a more a question that's seeking more practical and pragmatic responses. And Mary says, proposal 4 is mine. Oh, well, that's why I liked it the best. Anybody else want to speak to this? So let's take a straw poll on the list. If you like proposal 4 over on the left-hand side, please click the green agree check. We'll give this 10, 15 seconds. And by the way, if you don't click either, we're going to take you as neutral on this. So we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. All right, let's take those away. If you don't like question proposal 4 and want some alternative, please mark the red X disagree sign. All right, no one disagrees. All right, proposal 4 is it. That's how we'll address this question of whether, which boils down to whether it should be, we should explore whether it be practical and beneficial to have more than one TMCH provider. That's the thrust of the question. And that brings us to the final question here. And Mary counted 14 for 4, and I think, and there were none against 4, so we're going with 4, so staff will reflect that in our final question list. We're down to the final question, the bottom of page 7. Are the costs and benefits of the Trademark Clearinghouse for rights holders for ICANN, I guess it should be, and for the community, proportionate? I guess my response would be proportionate to what? Anybody want to speak from the subgroup or anybody else on what this question's trying to get at? Christine, please enlighten us.
Hi, Christine from Amazon. Yeah, it's just wordly, it's just kind of poorly worded. We want to know if the costs and benefits of the trademark TMCH are proportionate as between rights holders, ICANN, and the community. So are all three groups experiencing roughly the same level of costs and benefits, even if the absolutes and costs and benefits are not the same?
Okay. And we're talking about ICANN. Well, let me say, we've got when we say ICANN, we're talking about ICANN corporate, because the community, you know, is the ICANN. We always, when we say community, we mean the ICANN community. So when we say ICANN, we usually talk about ICANN corporate. The board and staff. I don't know if they have any costs and benefits. I'd like to at least see domain registrants listed here too, because they're the ones directly affected by claims notices, and also they may find that a term they wanted to register, a dictionary term, is not available because someone had a sunrise, you know, got a sunrise registration based on a TMCH registration. So I'd like to see domain registrants thrown in there after rights holders. I hope there's no objections to that. And then maybe the way to make this question more understandable is, are the costs, let me read a proposed formulation of the costs and benefits of the TMCH. For rights holders, domain registrants, ICANN, and the community proportionate for each of those groups. That at least identifies what the word proportionate is going to. Yeah, George in a chat room put with more stakeholders, but all those stakeholders, George, are all part of the broad ICANN community. So, all right, I'm going to open discussion on the supplemented version of the question I just proposed. Is there any support or opposition for that? And lack of speaking up will be indicate support. Steve Levy has put a check mark. I guess he thinks that's it's a good formulation. No one else seems to want to speak to it. And George, noting your comment, everybody in the community is both diluted and strengthened by being part of the community. It depends on the particular moment and the issue. That's just the world of ICANN. So, did staff get the formulation I proposed orally? Do you need that restated? David McCauley putting out registrants are part of the community. That's true, but so are rights holders. They're part of the community. So we want to parse out the ones who are most affected by this, while certainly keeping it open to considering the impact on other parts of the community. Christine, go ahead.
Hi, Christine from Amazon Registry. I don't know that we're talking about people that are most affected. I think that what we're talking about are three different types of effect. So the rights holders are the people for whom the Trademark Clearinghouse was designed as a solution. So their solution was, or their problem was, gosh, there's an awful lot of infringement going on in domain name registration, so when the new GTLD program gets launched, we need to find a way to effectively, you know, be able to protect marks. Registries and registrars said, gosh, it's kind of insane to have all these separate processes for setting up these sunrise periods. So the clearinghouse was designed to kind of solve the connection problem between rights holders and the quote-unquote community registrars and registries. Registrants receive a benefit from the claims notice so that they realize, at least in theory, that they might be running afoul of someone else's trademark rights. So I think that if we're going to call out registrants, then it doesn't make sense not to call out other parties as well. I think either registrants goes with the rest of the community or not. ICANN is its own thing. ICANN mostly just pays money. So I think that there are three different buckets currently, but to call out registrants means you now have to call out other stakeholders and parties that are also affected. It's not about impact. It's about type of affected party, in my opinion.
Thank you. Point taken. And I know David McCauley had some good comments in the chat room, which he suggested fairly balanced rather than proportionate, which I think might be that's a good approach. Let me read out a proposed formulation of this question. Please listen carefully. Are the costs and benefits of the trademark clearinghouse fairly balanced between rights holders, registrants, registries, registrars, other members of the ICANN community, and ICANN? Question mark. Does that satisfy everyone? It seems to incorporate everything we've heard orally and in the chat room. And David likes it, except wants to use among rather than between. So let's restate. Are the costs and benefits of the trademark clearinghouse fairly balanced among rights holders, registrants, registries, registrars, other members of the community, and ICANN? Question mark. I think that covers all the bases and makes the question a lot clearer as to what it's seeking. Susan Payne?
Yeah, thanks, Bill. I actually would prefer to use the term proportionate, and I may be splitting hairs, but I'm not sure that this is a question of balance necessarily. The point about this question was effectively the TMCH was brought in to try to address the concerns about rights holders feeling that new GTLDs were going to cause them incredible costs. And as Christine said, also to address the concerns that a number of registries and registrars are going to have about, if they were planning to run sunrises, as subsequently became mandated, but, had they been planning to run sunrises, which earlier registries have been doing, that they would all be doing the same exercise over and over again in sort of creating their own rules and re-verifying trademark rights and so on. So it was brought in to address that, but it wasn't necessarily brought in to balance that with the rights of all sorts of other parties. It was brought in to determine whether what was being proposed was kind of proportionate. And it may be that someone isn't, that it isn't balanced for a particular member of the community, but it's still nonetheless, a reasonable thing to do in order to meet the purpose that it was intended to be brought in for. I don't think I'm explaining this very well. I mean,
I don't think it's a huge point. I mean, again, whether it's fairly balanced or proportioned, I'd be fine if we were sticking with proportions and maybe saying reasonably proportionate, which gets into the fairness and I think brings in the concept of fairness and balance, but keeps proportionate. So how about that? How about reasonably proportionate?
Yeah, I think that seems okay.
Okay.
And bearing in mind, of course, the conversation that you had at the beginning, which was all around this is only so that we all know the scope of our work and
Okay, so looking over on the notes, we're going now with are the costs and benefits of the TMCH reasonably proportionate among rights holders, registrants, registries, registrars, other members of the community, and ICANN? Question mark. Okay. Is that it? Going once, going twice, is that acceptable to the group? If it is, we can finish our review of these questions. And Mary's talking about costs and benefits or advantages or disadvantages. Well, I think the word benefits and costs are broad enough that it, you know, Mary, that it encompasses advantages or disadvantages. And Christine Durain has a similar point of view. So it's an old hand from Susan. Unless someone has an objection to, well, it's changing as I stare at it, reasonably proportionate. Okay, so the alternative over there in the note column, that's what we're going with, unless someone wants to scream out right now an objection. Okay, we're done reviewing these questions. Staff, please circulate to the working group a list of the questions in their final form as agreed upon by this group. Send it out to the working group with a note to everyone on today's call, and as well as those not participating, that this is where we are, that they have till, let's say, we're not meeting next week. They have till, let's say, December 30th. To if anyone wants to respond on the list with any further suggestions for modifying them, but otherwise these are the final list of questions that will guide our discussion of the TMCH substance, which we're going to get into starting with our first call in January. So congratulations, group. We're done with that and can get into the much more exciting work of addressing the answers to all these questions. We have 11 minutes left. We have these registry responses. That's a 5-page document. I'm not sure we can get through a 5-page document in 11 minutes. In fact, I'm pretty sure we can't. What's the will of the group? Do you want to try to start going through this? We really could only do it for about 8 minutes, then we've got to talk about the timing of the call starting in the new year. So, you know, I'm going to exercise, unless someone really thinks we should get started on this, I think we should takes up this register response as the first order to business on the next call, rather than try to rush through it now and forget all the nuance when we start addressing the questions. So I see some support for that sentiment. So the final procedural thing we want to bring to your attention before we can adjourn this call is can staff put up the suggested time that the co-chairs agreed to yesterday when we spoke with staff and discussed call timing of our calls on a monthly basis? Is that available?
Hi, Phil. This is Mary.
Hi, Mary.
We did not prepare a document. We did not prepare a document for it, but as you, Kathy, and Jay Scott know when we discussed this, the new proposed time would be would replace this specific time that we're having the call today, which is 2200 UTC at the moment.
Right.
The proposal, still, would you like to go through the proposal? I can put the...
Well, I don't have it in front of me. I do remember that for three calls a month, we're going to keep using either Well, the times we're using now with the clock turned back in many parts of the world of either 1600 or 1700 UTC, we move it an hour later to not clash with, I forget which group we're conflicted with once a month, but twice a month, but we moved it back an hour to avoid that conflict. And then the reason we're doing this, because this 2200 UTC hour just doesn't work. We're still getting feedback from Asia-Pacific participants that none of the times we're using now is really very good for them. So, Mary, what is the time we're looking at now to substitute for this 2200 UTC, and what time does it correspond to in some major time zones? Do you have that in front of you?
That's what I've just put in the chat.
Okay.
I put that in the chat. I realize there's a couple of people who are only on the phone. So essentially,
I'll read it
the
out,
proposal
Mary.
Is to replace.
Yes.
Okay, go ahead, Phil.
Yeah, it would be 4:00 UTC, which is 8 p.m. Pacific time in the U.S., 11 p.m. Eastern time, 4 a.m. in London, sorry about that, 5 a.m. Central European time. So this is not a great time for Europe, but I will note all the other times work pretty well for Europe. Most of those calls are late afternoon in Europe. It's 3 in the afternoon in Sydney and 12 noon in Beijing, so it's a much better time for our participants from the Middle East all the way to Australia. So there's no time available that's good for everybody in the globe. It's just the way it is. Everybody gets stuck with at least one crappy call a month. So George is asking if that's 4 UTC on Thursday, which would make it still Wednesday in the U.S. and Canada. Well, Mary, is that what we're doing, or would it wind up being late Tuesday night in the U.S. and Canada?
When the staff did the comparison, and first let me say, I think in answer to a couple of questions or comments in chat, is Phil, as you noted, there is no time that will work for everyone. So this time was one of a couple of times we sent to the co-chairs as being one that could work for many, if not most. And that's why we didn't do a poll. The original proposal we had for the co-chairs was to keep it on a Wednesday so that it would always be Wednesday, whatever time UTC, whether it's 1600, 1700, 0400. It is open to the working group to prefer to have it on Thursday, 0400 UTC. It may depend on folks checking their schedules, but we did originally envisage it as Wednesday, 0400 UTC.
Okay. Well, let me suggest this. We've got 32 people on the call out of a working group membership of close to 150, and a lot of people in Asia are not on this. Why don't we put that proposal out on the list and solicit feedback, and then we don't have to make this decision today, but the co-chairs do have to make a decision in early January about changing to a time that's more convenient for the folks who reside in the Middle East to Australia. So let's do that. And that would be once per month. Also, let me note that we're not doing it now, but the co-chairs have discussed, and other working groups do this, that as we get into more substantive work and seeing how we're doing vis-a-vis our timetable, some calls may be expanded to 90 minutes to allow more to get done on them so that we don't have to drop subjects in the middle of discussion and then have all the loss of momentum of getting back up to speed on the next call. But that's not anything immediate, but it is something we're considering. as it is, you know, as necessary down the road. So with that, it's 4 minutes before the hour. Does anybody have any other business or anything they want to bring to the group's attention before we adjourn for the year? I'm just checking the chat room. Okay, so with that, we're going to circulate the final questions to the group. We're going to circulate the proposed new time for one of the four calls each month, being at 400 UTC, and solicit feedback on that. And when is our next call, Mary? Is it the first Wednesday in January?
Yes, I believe that's true. And Michelle, I think, is just going to type that in the chat either to confirm it or to...
Okay.
Yeah, she's confirming it's January 4th.
Okay. So everyone will be over their hangovers by then. That's good. All right. Well, thank you. And thanks for being so cooperative today and letting us finish up on the finalizing the questions. And everyone have a wonderful holiday and a very happy and healthy New Year, and we're going to start the year by getting into real substance on the key questions before us on the new RPM. So rest up, because we've got lots of work ahead of us. So happy New Year, and speak to you all in the new year. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you all.
Thank you so much again. The meeting has been adjourned. Operator, please stop the recording for us and disconnect all remaining lines. Have a great remainder of your day, everyone. Goodbye.